Pittsburgh to Carlisle, Latrobe to Jersey Shore. This is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Pennsylvania voters will find a lot more on their ballot this year than the presidential race. Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting is here with an overview of the 2020 elections. New jobs numbers are out, and the Pittsburgh region is lagging other mid-sized cities across the nation. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have an Allegheny Institute report. And overregulation is costing Pennsylvania businesses both time and money. Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Chris Nicholas in just a couple of minutes, but first, this month marks a significant milestone for us here at Lincoln Radio Journal. We began this program 25 years ago as a monthly broadcast that aired on just six radio stations. Today, Lincoln Radio Journal is the most widely broadcast public affairs program in Pennsylvania, airing on about 90 radio stations. It was January of 1995 when Al Pascal, Joe Geiger, and I made our first trek to the studios of Progressive Enterprises. Joe Trojak produced the program those first few years from a studio built in the basement of his parents' home. Much has changed over 25 years, both in technology and with the personalities you hear on this broadcast. But our core mission remains the same. We bring you news, information, and analysis on state and sometimes national issues with an eye toward making government more accountable. We initially divided the program into three segments, with me leading off each show with a newsmaker interview. Over the years, we have had on our broadcast a who's who of Pennsylvania government, political, media, and opinion leaders. The middle segment initially altered between Joe Geiger's Community Benefit Spotlight, which continues today, and chats with pollster economist Al Sinlinger. When Al Sinlinger passed away at the age of 94, Scott Rare took up the task of interpreting economic developments, and later the slot was filled by the late Al Neary, Pat Toomey until he ran for the U.S. Senate, Doug Keegan, and today features the Allegheny Institute report, which has included Jake Hauk, along with Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi. We've always ended our program with a commentary, shoes filled by Al Pascal, until his retirement and passing in 2012. When we became a weekly program, Dennis Barbagallo, then of the Tribune Review, joined Al offering commentaries, a slot that I took over when Dennis retired. Following Al were Scott Paterno, Jennifer Stefano, Beth Mumford, Anna McCausland, and now Ashley Klingensmith. Since the inception of our weekly production schedule, Lincoln Radio Journal has included every other week a Capital Watch Roundtable segment, initially hosted by Jim Panyard, then with the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. Capital Watch debuted with Susan Staub of Pennsylvanians for Right to Work and Sean Duffy, then of the Commonwealth Foundation, as regular panelists. Matt Briette, David Taylor, and Kevin Shivers eventually took over the segment, with Rebecca Euler replacing Kevin a couple of years ago to round out our current team. Oh, and along the way, we generated a spinoff program. Lincoln Radio Journal was so well received among Pennsylvania broadcasters, we launched a national program. American Radio Journal debuted in 2007. Today, American Radio Journal airs on 226 radio stations in 45 states across the country. And so here we are, 25 years later, still going strong. Special thanks to all who have made the past 25 years so successful. Folks like our production assistant, Joe Winters, and administrative assistant Carol Henry, our affiliate relations manager Tyler Henry, those grant-making foundations and individuals who finance our effort, and members of the Lincoln Institute's board of directors. Be assured that Joe Geiger, David Taylor, Matt Briette, Rebecca Euler, Eric Montardi, Frank Gamrat, and Ashley Klingensmith and I will continue working hard so that you can stay plugged in to the pulse of Pennsylvania. And now, we all know there's a presidential election this year, but voters across Penn's Woods will also be electing three statewide officials, members of Congress, along with half of the state Senate and all of the state House of Representatives. Here to take a look at those races is veteran political consultant Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Chris, starting out, we have three statewide row offices or constitutional offices. These are state government related. Tell us a bit about each of them, and let's start with Auditor General, which will be an open seat. Why is that?
So you're right, Loman. We have three statewide row offices: Attorney General, Auditor General, and Treasurer. They run for four-year terms, the same year as the president. They are restricted to only two terms, and that's why the Auditor General seat is open this time, because our current Auditor General, Eugene DePasquale, will have reached the end of his two-term limit in 2020. So it'll be what we call an open seat, no incumbent. So the Democratic Party looks to have a multi-candidate primary. The Republican Party looks to have a multi-candidate primary. So those two nominees chosen in April, remember, in the presidential year 2020, our primary is not the third Tuesday in May. It's the last Tuesday in April. We move up a little bit. We're late compared to other presidential states, but we're early for our own cycle. So those two nominees will be chosen, and that to me will probably be the premier row office seat next year because it's an open seat. The Attorney General slot, you'll have one-term incumbent Josh Shapiro, a Democrat, running for re-election. The Republicans will have a primary to figure out who their nominee is. And that seat, I've always called it, as an ode to Winston Churchill, I've always called it, Attorney General, first among equals. Mm-hmm. When Winston Churchill was prime minister, someone asked him, you have all these different cabinet officials, how does prime minister rank? And his famous answer was, first among equals. So Attorney General, because people can inherently understand what that position does. You're often in the news because you're fighting crime and locking up bad guys and that sort of stuff. So you get that gets a lot of attention. And then thirdly, we'll have a race for state treasurer, which is harder for people to kind of understand what they do. There's a one-term Democrat in that slot, a gentleman named Joe Torsella, and he'll be running for re-election. Republicans will find a candidate for that too. Interestingly, both Attorney General Josh Shapiro and Treasurer Joe Torsella, Democrats, are both from Montgomery County. So I'm sure the Democrats will look to want to bring in somebody perhaps from a different part of the state as you assemble a ticket when these statewide row offices run together. The parties often think about putting together a ticket because the three slots, while different, the three seats, they're kind of intertwined in people's minds and in what the state party does for them.
It has been quite a while, though, since Republicans have really been competitive in these races.
We have not won a quote-unquote virgin row office race since 2004 when Tom Corbett won the race for Attorney General, and we have not won any type of row office seat since he won re-election in 2008. When I say we, I am a Republican political consultant, obviously. So that's I use the greater we to talk about the Republican Party. So the Democrats are on a run when it comes to these statewide offices. I often remind people that putting the judges off to the side because they're judges, but we have six elected statewide officials in Pennsylvania. And for a long, long time now, five of them have been Democrats, only one Republican, Senator Pat Toomey.
Let's talk now about congressional races. We'll caveat this. You referenced Pat Toomey. There is no U.S. Senate race in Pennsylvania this year.
Correct. There's no governor's race and there's no U.S. Senate race. So our statewide offices are those lower level row office seats that we just got done talking about. So there's be lots of attention nationally in terms of our congressional delegation. It's split evenly 9-9. We saw impeachment vote recently that all nine Republicans voted against both articles, all nine Democrats voted for. So we're evenly split. And this will be the last election cycle where we have 18 members of Congress. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania's population is not declining, but it's not advancing quickly enough to keep up with the rest of the country, to keep up that pace. So we're going to lose a congressional district. So after 2020, heading into 2022, we'll go from 18 slots to 17. So some of the races your listeners might want to think about is the first district in Bucks County, which the way it is drawn, it is a very even Steven race. The Democrats want to get that. It's the only congressional district in the greater Philadelphia area that they do not control. The 7th district up in the Lehigh Valley, which has a first-term Democratic incumbent congresswoman named Susan Wilde. The 10th district here around Harrisburg, where we're recording this, incumbent Scott Perry, again, the district is drawn to be on a razor's edge, and it is. And the outgoing auditor general that I talked about a couple minutes ago, Eugene DePasquale, he looks to be the Democratic nominee, so that would bring a lot of attention to that race. You've got the 17th district, which is out in western PA, kind of Beaver, Lawrence counties, and then the South Hills in Allegheny County. That's a fellow Democrat by the name of Connor Lamb, who won a heavily contested special election in the last year or so. Republicans want to go after that. So I think you're going to see a lot of attention on the congressional races, but of course it'll be isolated because something happening in a Bucks County district doesn't really impact somebody listening out west in Somerset County.
Now, we also have state legislative races, half of the state Senate, 25 senators, the entire state House of Representatives also on the ballot in 2020. It looks like a lot of national money is going to come in here because national forces are wanting to get control of the state House to control reapportionment. Are we going to really see a ferocity this year we haven't seen in a long time in state House and Senate races?
I absolutely agree with you, Loman. Anytime you run in the zero year, 2020 being a year ending in zero, that class of legislators draws the new lines for the House and Senate and for Congress in the year ending with one, 2021. So you always get more attention on legislative races in the zero year. Pennsylvania, both of our chambers controlled by Republicans. But as an analyst, I would say both chambers are quote unquote in play. There's enough seats up. The Democrats in the House last year won a net gain of 11 seats, won 14 and lost 3. So they're in a roll. Democrats picked up 5 seats between Election Day 2018 and a special election a few months later. Now, recently, a Democratic state senator from Northeast PA, NEPA as we call it, went from being a Democrat to being independent, but is caucusing, meaning voting mostly with Republicans. So that's eased a little of the pressure on the state Senate. But again, we have all 203 House members. If your listeners out there, if they live in one of the odd-numbered Senate seats, 1, 3, 5, 7, whatever, they're going to have a state Senate race. And I think you will see a lot more money contributed to the candidates and a lot more outside groups coming in. So when you get a piece of mail about a candidate or you see a TV ad, look at the bottom for the disclaimer. It says paid for by, and that's how you can tell who's playing in these games. But the Pennsylvania legislative races are going to be one of the top five in the country next year in terms of activity because Republicans, of course, want to keep control of the House and Senate because regardless of what happens, you still have Democratic Governor Tom Wolf. And Democrats are like, gosh, we could do so much more with Governor Wolf if we had a Democratic House and Senate. So they're going to be going to the max as well.
We have been talking again with Chris Nicholas. Chris, a veteran political consultant here in Pennsylvania with Eagle Consulting. And Chris, where can folks go? You've referenced some of your publications, a number of things you're doing. Where can folks find you on the web, on Twitter?
Web address is eagleconsult.com, eagleconsult.com. And I really like to be on Twitter. You can find my political prognostications and other efforts there at Eagle63, at Eagle63.
Chris Nicholas of Eagle Consulting. Chris, we'll check in with you again a week or two before the primaries. Thank you.
Thank you.
The most recent jobs report finds the Pittsburgh region is not keeping pace with like-sized cities around the country. For a look at the numbers, we turn to Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi for this report from the Allegheny Institute. Eric?
Hello, and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute, Frank Gamrat. Frank, how are you today?
Good, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing well, Frank. On behalf of you and the staff here at the Allegheny Institute, we want to wish our listeners a happy and healthy 2020. Let's talk about one of the things that happened here in the fall of 2019 as the most recent job numbers came in for the metro area. Jobs are obviously a big issue. We want to know what's going on in the metro area, the 7-county metro area here in Pittsburgh and Western Pennsylvania. You recently did a brief on the job data on specifically non-farm jobs, and something happened as of October 2019 from the year earlier that hasn't happened in a while. Would you give our listeners some insight?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we do here at the Allegheny Institute is we keep track of the labor market, and not only in our little Pittsburgh MSA, but statewide as well. And of course, the news releases come through, and they come from the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry through the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. And in October of 2019, we noticed that the Pittsburgh MSA's job count, total non-farm job count, was down 3,000 jobs, or about a quarter of a percent, over what it was in October 2018. Now, we look at the monthly year-over-year comparisons. It takes the seasonality out of it. So if you compare October to October, you don't have to worry about, you know, the different changes to the weather or holidays or that kind of thing. And so I went, huh, that's new. It's been negative for the first time in a long time. So I went back in some history, and the last time we had a year-over-year drop like that was back in August 2016 versus what was in August 2015. I thought, wow, that's a long stretch. So naturally, the question is, well, how does it compare to other areas? So I looked and I said, okay, let's start with national. Nationally, the change in non-farm jobs is up 1.4%. In October of 19 versus October of 18, across the nation, they added jobs. Well, what about the state? You know, Pennsylvania. Well, Pennsylvania also added jobs, about a half percent, so definitely well behind the national rate, but certainly ahead of Pittsburgh. Let's look across the state, Philadelphia. Now, for Philadelphia's metro, I did look at just the Pennsylvania counties, because the Philadelphia area covers a little bit of Delaware. And so I had to take into account just only PA. And the Philadelphia metro actually bested the national rate by a hair at 1.48%. So now you got me curious. I want to look at other comparable metros. Now, of course, for those who aren't familiar with the term metro areas, it's usually a handful of counties that are anchored by a city. So, for example, the ones I chose, San Antonio, Charlotte, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Indianapolis, all have about 2.4 to 2.5 million people in their metros, and Pittsburgh has 2.4, so similar size metro areas. And to really no one's surprise, for total non-farm growth, San Antonio was head and shoulders above everybody else. They grew at a rate of 3.4%, followed by Charlotte and Cincinnati, each over 2%. Cleveland was under 1%, as was Indianapolis, but they were all better than the Pittsburgh MSA. And so now you start thinking, well, what could be the issue? There are subcategories to total non-farm jobs, and so we started to look at them. And you start with the two broad categories. One is goods producing, and under goods producing, you got mining and logging, construction and manufacturing. And then, of course, the other service providing, which is like your doctor's offices and retail and financial and businesses and leisure and hospitality. So the broader categories are split amongst those two. So let's start with goods producing. And again, Pittsburgh had a negative growth to goods producing at 2.4%, which was the largest. Now, this is your manufacturing and construction and mining and logging. Nationally, it was up about almost a percent. There were some other negatives out there, so we weren't the only ones. Cleveland and Charlotte were negative. And quite frankly, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania as a whole was down about a half percent. So while they were all down, they were not down nearly to the magnitude as they are here in the Pittsburgh metro area. And of course, we had some areas that had positive growth. San Antonio, again, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, they were all well over 1%. As a matter of fact, San Antonio, Indianapolis were 4%. So their sector in goods producing is very strong. Now, why do we care about goods producing? Well, these tend to be industries where there's a strong externality, if you will, the throw off jobs. You have a factory that can support things like restaurants and grocery stores and retail stores and that kind of thing. And they're prized for that extra benefit. Plus, they typically have higher wages. So that's an area where you'd like to see some growth. And of course, in this area with the negative growth, it's a real head scratcher.
Is there any areas then, or I guess you'd call them at this point subsectors, if we're going below goods and service producing, right, anywhere like where compared to the metro areas, the state and the U.S. that Pittsburgh, the metro did better in this year's time period?
So I want to start with eds and meds. And the reason I want to start with eds and meds is because here in the Pittsburgh area, everybody brags about it. We got a lot of hospitals. We got a lot of of universities and colleges, and we're an eds and meds sector. Well, so is every other big city out there, so it's not something unique. And it turned out with the eds and meds sector, health and education, and of course education here includes colleges, universities, and private education, but not public K through 12 education. That's considered government jobs. But under the eds and meds sector, we actually dropped 1% of our jobs in the MSA. The national was a 2.6% increase to this sector. Pennsylvania was a 0.5%. Leisure and hospitality, that was the one sector that had been propping us up for a while. And that's really not a good thing, because you're talking restaurants, full service, part service, you're talking hospitality, you're talking arts, recreation, and cultural firms that really don't have a history of high-paying jobs. It's not really where you want your economy to be based, but those jobs have been holding us up for a while. And here again, a drop of about 0.6%. The Commonwealth as a whole was a drop of 0.4%. What was our best area? What was our best subsector? And you have to go back to professional and business services. And with professional and business services, we actually had growth rate, 1.3%, which is good. Better than the Commonwealth as a whole, which is less than 1%, and Indianapolis, which was less than 1%.
So what can be done then to change where Pittsburgh's metro area stands there based on these recent job data numbers?
Well, you know, we've been saying it for a year. This is the economy. And what we have here in the Pittsburgh MSA, and to quite frankly, to a degree, the Commonwealth as a whole, the willingness of our elected officials to meddle in the economy, to have a regulatory system that really does not foster growth, to not be afraid of tax. Anytime a business decides that it's want to be reasonably successful, the government comes out of nowhere with a tax on it. Under the goods producing, mining and logging, you know, on this side of the state, Marcellus Shale was doing really well. Governor Wolf comes in, and his pre-campaign promise was, I'm going to tax this industry. I'm going to tax it. So that's what they do. Whenever anything's successful, they go after a tax. You've got to foster the environment which businesses can grow in Pennsylvania and in Pittsburgh area. We don't seem to do that.
Frank, interesting stuff as always, and our listeners can go to our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org, to see this brief and look at some of the archives too on job pictures. You can follow us on Twitter, and you can always hear us here on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report.
Excessive state regulations are making it difficult for businesses to expand or locate in Pennsylvania. With some examples and also to talk about what's being done to change that, we turn to Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania for this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
On December 12th, Senate Intergovernmental Operations Chairman Doug Mastriano held a regulatory reform hearing at Martin's Famous Potato Rolls and Bread in Franklin County. It was there that fourth-generation baker and executive Tony Martin shared that they have been navigating the processes and procedures set by DEP, PennDOT, EPA, and others for over 4 years to simply move an entrance to their facility from one road to another. They are still working through that process. It has taken us less time to defeat enemies in world wars. We can do better. With a renewed focus in 2020, we're going to send a series of transformative regulatory reforms to the governor before the end of session. But before we discuss the specific legislation, let's discuss the basics. What is regulation? Regulations are rules, also known as administrative laws, that state agencies implement to achieve certain policy objectives. They provide instructions or standards by which individuals must comply. And while some of these standards are often important, too often regulations are confusing and burdensome with little regard for how they would be put into practice. Currently, PA has more than 153,000 regulatory restrictions affecting every industry in the Commonwealth. The Mercatus Center has quantified that the Pennsylvania Code contains roughly 12.8 million words. Assuming that a person spends 40 hours a week reading, it would take them 18 weeks to read the entire code. And this overwhelming regulatory status quo imposes huge costs, especially on small businesses that cannot afford them. As a result, entrepreneurs either spend lots of money and time dealing with regulation or simply go out of business. we have a number of bills to solve the problem. House Bill 1055 creates an independent Office of the Repealer to review existing regulations and implements a two-out, one-in standard for the creation of new rules. Senate Bill 119, the Red Tape Reduction Act, similarly addresses a review of the code and implements a one-in, two-out model for new regulations. House Bill 806 contains RAINS Act language, or regulations from the executive in need of scrutiny, and requires the General Assembly to approve regulations that have an impact of more than $1 million annually. House Bill 430 gives the General Assembly the ability to repeal any regulation in effect through concurrent resolution. House Bill 509 reforms the administration of permits in the Commonwealth. House Bill 762 requires agencies to appoint a regulatory compliance officer to serve the regulated community with advisory opinions and assistance in noncompliance scenarios prior to the levying of a penalty. And House Bill 995, the Fighting Chance Act, creates a pilot program for red tape reduction. Other states are taking similarly aggressive action to reduce red tape. Ohio's new budget includes a provision stating that for each restriction added, agencies must remove two others. That policy will be in place for the next 4 years. Rhode Island set an expiration date for its entire code at the end of 2018, forcing agencies to review all existing rules and refile those they wanted to keep. The state then eliminated 31% of its rule volume in that process. And Idaho allowed its entire regulatory code to sunset on July 1st. Governor Little's administration issued a new streamlined code to replace it, eliminating 20% of its chapters in the process. Ultimately, a more balanced and cost-effective regulatory culture will not only benefit existing businesses, but will spark the creation of new ones, making our Commonwealth more competitive and prosperous. Reducing government-imposed barriers is key for Pennsylvania to reach its full potential. Restoring government to its proper constitutional limits by improving our regulatory culture will get us closer to achieving our full economic promise. To find us on Facebook, search at PAAFP and on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 25 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WEDOAM in White Oak, WFRJ-FM in Windburg, along with WROV-FM in Ridgeway-Dubois, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.
We'll be right back.